You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
What a sad day. The Prince of Darkness, arguably the founder of the heavy metal genre, has passed away today at the age of 76.
You know, I got the text from you, and I can acknowledge his musical significance and his contribution to that genre.
Yet you're going to Macy's.com as we speak.
It's not my thing. I think later in life they kind of became a pop culture phenomenon, whether he wanted to or not, because of the reality TV stuff. But I know a lot of people, not just men, a lot of fans loved him and loved that music.
I loved the music.
Well, and for a lot of people, it's going to be, you never forget where you were when you heard that news. I mean, yeah. I was out in the newsroom and boss came out and told us, and is the first thing that we said, and Scott immediately started calling everybody in his Rolodex.
I did.
76.
I called my brother. I called T. I called Penna Machin to inform them that Ozzy Osbourne had just died. I mean, because
Are you more surprised at your reaction to it or the fact he lived so long? He's kind of like a Keith Richards, where everyone marveled, and with his late in life health problems, that he lived to 76.
So he was referred to as a genetical mutant. His wife, Sharon, who I have no respect for, once said that there at the end of the world, there will be cockroaches, Ozzy Osbourne, and Keith Richards.
Yeah.
And that is all that's going to survive the end of the world. Yes and yes on the questions you just asked. What I don't think can be quantified is his impact on the world of music. He literally ushered in a new genre, heavy metal, which lasted, still exists. But he and Black Sabbath, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, Bill Ward, they literally ushered in.
They invented heavy metal.
They clearly invented heavy. Some people would argue it was Deep Purple or Led Zeppelin. No, it was Black Sabbath. They created heavy metal. Everybody else followed. And I remember years ago, I only saw Ozzy in concert once. And it was at what was then the Sprint Center. And I remember I was there with Brenninger, and Ozzy gets done playing, and Brenninger turns to me and says, "We need to go to church."
Yeah.
I mean, it was that, I don't want to say satanic, it was that dark.
Yeah. Listen to the opening sentence of the New York Times story. Ozzy Osbourne, who achieved enormous success as a pioneer of two disreputable but popular entertainment genres, heavy metal music and reality television, died on Thursday. Do you think what they did was disreputable? For your mother, it sure was.
Well, the only record my mother ever threw out of the house like a Frisbee was an Ozzy Osbourne record in 1986, The Ultimate Sin, where she said, and I quote, "I will not have this satanic crap in my house." And into the woods, the record went. And it was a vinyl record. And I never found it.
And for St. Margaret to use the C word, she meant it.
Crap. Yeah.
13 platinum albums, and achieved even wider fame for his rock and roll excess, including that infamous onstage incident in which he bit the head off a bat.
Some have questioned whether it was a real bat. There is no question. In 1980, Sharon, soon to be Sharon Osbourne, was his manager. They were negotiating a contract with CBS Records. And Ozzy, who was drunk and high at this contract discussion, pulls a dove out of his pocket, bites the head off the dove, and then spits the dove's head out onto the table. CBS signed him immediately.
He claims that all of the stuff on stage, the craziness, is a role I play. Mm-hmm. It was work.
He wasn't. He had a horrible addiction problem in the 1980s. I mean, just riddled with alcoholism, cocaine, and he could not get straight. Despite countless efforts by Sharon to get him straight, He simply could not do it. There's the infamous story. He's on tour. Motley Crue is his opening act in 1982-83. And they're all at the pool. It's a day off from the tour. And Motley Crue, just getting started, they've got one or two records under their belt, are trying to one-up Ozzy on how gross can you be. And they do a couple of stunts. Ozzy pulls the straw out of his mixed drink. There's a line of ants walking along the pavement next to the pool. And Ozzy snorts the ants through the straw. He hands the straw to Tommy Lee, and Tommy Lee says, "We can't beat that."
He later in life did not, as previously reported, did not have Parkinson's. He had Parkinsonism. That is what they call it. A rare condition called Parkinsonism with symptoms similar to Parkinson's disease, exacerbated by his chronic drug abuse.
Yeah. And I don't know, I'm not here to question anybody's sobriety. He claimed in his later years that he was sober. But that has, I'm not questioning it, but it has been questioned by others that he never fully ever got sober, that he just could not. But he consumed, I think everybody is well aware, a horrific amount of alcohol and drugs.
It's only been 17 days since his final show.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
He wasn't able to stand at that show. They seated him in this gigantic throne. But I did watch clips of that show. He was remarkably good.
Yeah, he didn't look, I said it to you in the newsroom, he didn't look any more unhealthy than he did previously.
Mm-hmm. There were 46,000 fans that showed up for that show, and another 5.8 million watched online. It was the final ever Ozzy Osbourne show. He would never perform again, so he said. He did say, I'll continue to record music. Little did we know that he'd be dead in 2 weeks. But he said, this is the last time I ever perform live.
When he inducted Black Sabbath into the Hall of Fame,
Lars Ulrich
of Metallica praised the group's huge hymns of doom and said, quote, "When it comes to defining a genre within the world of heavy music, Sabbath stands alone."
No question about it. And I'm not a huge fan. I'm not a huge fan of Nirvana. I am a huge fan of Ozzy solo, but Black Sabbath with Ozzy.
But Sabbath is what you're saying was to heavy metal what Nirvana was to grunge.
Yes.
Sure.
Without question. Completely changed the landscape. And Ozzy and Tony Iommi were the brains behind what was Black Sabbath. Originally, the band was called Earth, but they renamed it as the music started getting a little darker and the lyrics more doomier, if that's a word. They ended up changing the name to Black Sabbath. And everybody thought they were satanic, and early on, critics wrote them off, said, oh, these guys are no good. They're terrible. They're satanic, blah, blah, blah. They literally ushered in a genre of music that lasted more than 20 years.
Do you think that knowing that his stage presence came to an end may have contributed to his death?
Well, say, I don't know.
We talk about people who do things for a long time and they die after, like, 2 weeks after retirement.
Yeah.
In a sense, him stepping off that stage for a final time was a retirement. He lived for the stage, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. Telephone number is 913-586-7798. Ozzy Osbourne, dead today at the age of 76.
So we have way more questions than we do answers. A horribly sad story out of Topeka. And we want to update you because when I turned on the television in here in the studio, there was still, you know, that whatever that weather and news thing is, mm-hmm. right when you first turn on the TV, was still reporting that we have an active Amber Alert for a 2-year-old who was believed to be in imminent danger. We're going to start with the good news. The child has been recovered.
In Illinois.
And is safe. Mm-hmm. Nothing else about this story. I mean, that is the silver lining in what is an otherwise horrifying story, Scott.
Northeast Illinois, by the way.
Which is to say Chicago?
No, no. But not close to St. Louis was my point.
Okay. Can somebody explain this story to me? There are two people dead. The initial Amber Alert said that the child, Zabe Mendez, was abducted yesterday, 7/21/25, but now we're hearing it was on Friday.
Yeah.
There was no mention in the original Amber Alert that there were two people found dead in the home. Mom said that she didn't know who had abducted the child, according to the Amber Alert that I got at 11:58 this morning.
Or at least the report said unknown suspect. It didn't directly say whether or not mom said anything. So, all of this is so confusing.
Let's back up and tell people what happened first. And that is someone called for a welfare check on two people inside of a residence down by like the old Sardou Bridge, if you know where that is, on the north side of Topeka, sort of close to downtown. Off of, was it Wabash, Sam? I'm trying to remember the name of the street.
500 Wabash.
Called and said, like, we need a welfare check. We have not heard from the two people inside of this house.
Now, this is not, you know Topeka better than we do. Yeah. That's not the best neighborhood in town.
It's rough. It's not the suburbs. Okay. So police show up and they find two people dead inside around 10 a.m. on July 22nd.
That's today.
That is today. They find two people dead inside because Sam was asking out in the newsroom, what is the deal with the Amber Alert? They're now saying that they believe this child was taken 3 days ago. Why did it take 3 days to issue an Amber Alert? Here's why. I don't think anyone realized a child was missing because police didn't realize there were two people dead in that house. And then they contact relatives of the deceased. You know, we have a situation here. What's going on? And my guess is a family member said, where's the baby? And then police said, what baby? That's why there was such a delay in the Amber Alert. And you would know, Scott, just on preliminary detective work, when the last time those two people were heard from inside of that house. So, and my guess is that was 2 or 3 days ago, which is why they say they think he was abducted then.
I'm horribly confused. Is mom still alive or is she one of the two that are dead?
They have not identified the relationship of the man arrested and the two-year-old, and they have not identified the two people deceased in that home.
So I don't know that if I can get an Amber Alert back on my phone. Sam, is there a way to go back and pull the Amber Alert out
of
somewhere?
I've got it in front of me. It created
some confusion.
So will you read the Amber Alert as it came in at 11:58 this morning?
The suspect was last seen around 5:45 a.m. July 21st. Driving a 2008 white Lexus IS250 with a Kansas tag, blah, blah, blah.
That's fine.
The child was forcibly taken, 2 years old, 2 feet, 5 inches tall, roughly 40 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes.
So
unknown suspect.
Isn't there something in there about mom says or the mother says?
It just said suspect unknown. Suspect colon unknown.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if you look at the timeline, Scott, they know pretty quickly that no one had heard from this woman and this man, whoever they are, inside of this house since, pick your day.
Friday.
Sunday, whatever the day was. From there, they are now, you know, that was where the timeline confusion came in. That's when that child was likely taken because the child is nowhere to be found.
The verbiage did say forcibly taken from the mother by an unknown suspect.
How do they know that if mom is not alive?
Well, they didn't. I think they took some liberties trying to figure out what happened because they found two people dead in the home and were trying to piece everything together.
And so, you know, the original question was, if this child was found in Illinois, why call the Amber Alert? We have to be careful with this. We now know the reason. They absolutely should have called an Amber Alert.
I agree with you on that.
It just took them a couple. They didn't even know there was a child missing until they went in for a welfare check, found two people dead, and there's a baby missing.
And I have long argued that the Amber Alert system has been abused over the last 20 years.
It has gotten way better.
You're right. This is clearly an example of when the Amber Alert should be issued.
Yes.
We have two dead people, okay?
And a missing baby.
We have a baby that, you know, 2-year-old kid that we don't know where they are, and a car that should be at this house and is no longer at this house. So if ever an Amber Alert needed to be issued, it is a case like this.
Yeah, correct.
But, you know, in the past, and again, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, it's not going to surprise you that I've been very critical. And I think you have too, to some extent, of the Amber Alert system, and it's overused, sometimes abused. Because when the Amber Alert was originally established, what was it, 25 years ago, 20 years ago?
It's been a long time.
It was supposed to be for cases like this. When a child is missing and we don't know who took the child,
yep.
And we have reason to believe, obviously because of the violence at this home in Topeka, that this kid is in danger. It got abused to the extent that when there was a non-custodial parent who wanted to spend more time with their kid.
Yeah.
And they didn't return them from a Sunday afternoon trip to the park, then all of a sudden we have an Amber Alert issued. And then it becomes more of the boy who cries wolf.
Yeah. I'm proud that they did this. I do wish on the front end they had said, you know.
Likely not in Kansas anymore?
We have a missing child. It's been several days. This child could be anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's important to issue it, Sam, because think about all of the truck drivers. You know, the truck drivers really out there are the eyes and the ears of that system. You stop at a rest stop, and we don't know how it came to be that they found the suspect and this child.
Well, my guess is that it's not because there was an Amber Alert issued in Illinois.
They had to tell somebody in Illinois
because
they were able
to
identify the car. By the way, it was Mattoon, the story that I saw that said Northeast was a bit misleading. It is almost on the eastern edge of Illinois, about halfway up the state, a little bit off of I-70.
Okay. So almost like to Indiana.
Yeah.
Okay.
When we get back, the conviction has been reversed in the Eton Pates case that put focus on missing children. That put missing children on milk cartons. If you are our age or older, my goodness, you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro Hernandez, a former bodega stock clerk, had confessed back in... I believe the 80s, a judge today ruled new trial or set him free.
Mm.
And I will remind you, they never found that child.
If you missed the news earlier today, Ozzy Osbourne has died today at the age of 76. We will visit with the program director of 98.9 The Rock, Bob Edwards, coming up right after 3 o'clock.
So one of the reasons I want to talk about this again is, number one, it was decades later that they had this suspect confess to killing Eton Pates after someone just called police and said, you know, that guy was weird. I always sort of suspected he did it. That's where this started.
Hmm.
The conviction has been tossed. He's been in prison 13 years.
Was there any evidence other than his confession?
Zero.
Okay, wow.
But psychiatrists and child psychologists say, listen to this, that the Eton Pates disappearance and murder, and then 2 years later, the murder of Adam Walsh.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking early 80s.
Early 80s, quote, changed the way we raised our children in a way that was, quote, very damaging to human development. He says, quote, it was a terrible mistake. Children need to play. And I want to talk about this, Scott.
Well, Eton Pates wasn't playing. He was walking to school.
By himself for the first time.
In Manhattan.
It was the first day he had ever been allowed to walk to school by himself at age 6.
I got scolded for walking to school in third grade by myself. It was one block. I got scolded by the receptionist lady because my mother allowed me to walk to school by myself. It was one block.
But Sam, that is why. And I don't think people that are younger than Scott and I truly understand what the 80s were like and the milk cartons where generations of us sat eating our cereal, staring at that beautiful, missing, blue-eyed child who was never going to be found.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know, and so you're looking around every corner for the boogeyman who took this little boy and then wondering, where did he go? Where is he? And I don't know that the milk carton, you know, he really launched the way we looked for missing children and should. And the National Center for Exploited and Missing Children is a phenomenal organization.
But I'm gonna disagree with something. The story that you were reading from just now said that it fundamentally altered.
It did.
The way, and in a negative way, is the way that I inferred it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that the implication of the story? That it negatively impacted the way that kids
play.
Yes. Kids don't play by themselves. If you're going to play with your friends, you're going to be in a group. I don't think there's anything wrong with, as I was, and I know you and I were becoming parents at roughly the same time, for me to say to Sarah or to Maya, you're not walking to school by yourself. You have to have a friend or I'm going to take you.
Always.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But before that happened, it was a seminal moment. There was before Etan Pates and Adam Walsh, and there was after, and that was it.
I don't
and
disagree
you
with
remember
you on that.
What happened to Adam? Do you remember where he was with his mom when it happened?
I don't.
Sears. Oh, I can tell you every detail because we're all crazy.
No, you're
because
no,
of
see,
these
I
cases.
I didn't know where they were.
He was in a store with his mother, and I am almost positive it was Sears. Might have been JCPenney. I'm a little fuzzy because it's been 50 years. But they were walking. He went over to look at some toys. She came back around to pick him up. Like, where did he go? Never came home. And so, Scott, God, I remember being at like Richmond Gordman's with my mom. I would not leave her side.
They were at a Sears.
I know. How do I remember these things?
Dana,
because I'm crazy.
Know.
And Scott, I remember. Then they had a movie about it with Jo Beth Williams.
Wow.
And it traumatized me in ways. I am telling you, those two disappearances.
His mom had left him at a kiosk with an Atari
yep,
video game
Atari.
Display
yep.
and told him, play, I'm going to go shop, I'll be right back.
We did that all the time when we were kids, until Etan Pates and Adam Walsh, and then I would not leave her side. She wouldn't let me leave her side. One of my more traumatizing memories was at Richmond Gordman's in Topeka.
Okay.
And Austin was a much different child than I was. I was the clingy, not leaving the adults.
And Austin's younger than you, right?
He's 4 years younger.
Okay.
Austin was like, I'm out. I'm going to play. He leaves. I panicked. Sobbing panicked. Because mom went back to go get him, and he was nowhere to be found. And I knew he had been taken. I just knew it. And I was so angry at her because she didn't have the same level of panic I did. I just remember thinking, he's gone. And you know where we found him? He was hiding in between the turnstiles of the clothes, giggling and laughing and running
That's
around.
That's where every boy
yeah,
hides.
He was probably 6 years old. I was furious. It really did do a number, I think, on a lot of us growing up.
So I think if the argument is it made parents a little too helicopter-ish.
Yes.
You could make that argument. But it also reminded us the kids don't get to walk to school by themselves, Etan Pates. And I don't think anybody would think that that's a good idea.
But a kid can't stand there at a kiosk and play Atari while I look at sheets two aisles down? You know the answer is no, Scott. The answer is
no. The answer was no once.
But kids need to learn independence, though.
Not in a
series,
they
don't. Learn to get out of a sticky situation.
You know, I, raising my children, would never ever allow those boys to go into a restroom by themselves. Ever. They would either come into the women's bathroom with me.
What?
Or they would go into the men's with their dad. They were never going to go into a men's restroom by themselves.
What if they were like 12?
It got a little awkward as they got older.
You think?
By the time Jack was 12, he would go in with his brother. But this is all born from those cases. I'm telling you, it is.
Wait,
and the phones are ringing, and
no,
if you're a 50-year-old woman,
no,
you
on.
Are the same way.
So your youngest is what, 19 now?
Yes.
Okay. You got divorced from Joe, was it 12 years ago, 13 years? It was right when you joined the show. So 14 years ago.
Okay.
He would have been 5.
No way was he going into a bathroom by himself at age 5. And it, let alone like a rest stop or something, because there was another kidnapping case after those two, and it was a little boy that went into a bathroom. I'm telling you.
So where did he go to the bathroom?
Stuff seeps into your psyche, and when there are psychologists now saying those cases changed us in ways that were extremely unhealthy.
And you agree with that.
I am exhibit A.
But you bought into it.
Oh, 100% I bought into it.
As someone who grew up in that era after the change, I agree.
Look at Dave. He still remembers the movie. Scott, I can tell you the song they were singing at his funeral in the movie. Dave, do you remember it?
Dana, I remember it so well that it still gives me a little bit of shivers when you talk about it. There's the scene in the movie where John Walsh.
Yep.
And I think it was one of the guys from Hill Street Blues.
Yep. And they find him.
Actually,
yep,
played him. And the detectives come to his house.
Yep.
And they believed that Henry Lee Lucas, who was a serial killer at that time, was possibly the person that had abducted him.
Yep.
And they had, oh boy, this is still creepy. They had taped evidence that Henry Lee Lucas used to record.
Yep.
The victims. And they put the tape in and they put the headphones on John Walsh, and they said, we need you to listen to this tape to see if you recognize your son's voice.
Yep.
And all it is these children being
abused. Yes,
and,
Dave.
And it was just so unsettling that even to this day, it is still, I can still see it in my mind, and he's listening to it for about 10 seconds, and it just throws the headphones off because he cannot listen.
How old were you, Dave, when that movie came out?
Oh, gosh. If you knew what year, I could tell you.
1983, October 10th of 1983.
And it was Judd Hirsch. If you look him up, it was Judd Hirsch from Taxi that played that detective.
The TV show was called Adam, and it aired three separate years, 1983, 1984, and 1985. On its debut in 1983, it attracted 38 million viewers.
And our parents, Scott, sat us down to watch that. I think they did the best they knew to do, right? And they were like, you watch this, and this is why I keep my eye on you in a grocery store. Well, I'm telling you, that movie is seared into my every cell and fiber of my being in a very unhealthy way.
I was going to say, this is not a good thing. I hope you're not bragging.
I'm telling you that there are so many people listening right now, like Dave, that remember being told we're going to sit down and watch this as a family, and you'll think of this the next time you try to leave me in a store.
To be crazy, you have to be exceptional in some way.
Thank you.
Dana is not exceptional nor crazy, because the text line is lighting up with the same exact
during
sentiment.
Think I'm even weirder? During the funeral in that movie, during the funeral, there is a children's choir and they sing the song, make me a dun dun of your peace. Dun 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 dun
make
dun
me a
dun,
vessel
dun,
of
dun,
your
dun.
Peace.
They sing that. When I went to get married 30 years later, my then almost mother-in-law said to me, I've always loved this song. You should play this at your wedding. She sits down at a piano. She starts to play it. And I look at her and I go, oh, God, that's the song they played at Adam Walsh's funeral. She looked at me like I was insane. And if you look it up,
I look at you that
I
way too.
Guarantee you that is the song in that movie they played during the funeral scene for that child.
Is it Make Me a Channel of Your Peace?
Yep. Look it up. You'll get results.
I don't need to. I'm getting ready to play it for you.
My brain is a crazy place when it comes to children being separated from their parents. Yeah, wasn't playing that at my wedding.
Is this it?
Yeah. If you go to Dave in Liberty right now, he's traumatized.
Dana, we already went to Dave.
He will remember this song. I don't need to hear it again. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, my God. Oh, it's awful.
When you announce your retirement and the world goes, I thought he had already retired, Philip Rivers signed a one-day contract.
Wait, didn't he already retire?
5 years ago, Sam.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he retired in 2020.
Huh.
But he's now signed a one-day contract with the Chargers to retire as a Charger.
Good for him.
It was reported in the story from USA Today that the 49ers considered hiring him in 2023 when Brock Purdy injured his elbow. But that never materialized because they lost to the Eagles in the NFC Championship game.
Tyrann Mathieu also announced his retirement today. Honey Badger.
Oh.
Didn't he retire like 5 years ago, too?
He hasn't played for a couple of years, but he has announced his retirement officially today.
All right. Well, Philip Rivers, who hasn't played in 5 years, officially retired today.
I am a little bit bitter that he didn't come back to the Chiefs to retire, but whatever.
Oasis concerts are apparently a safe space for fans of the extramarital variety. Liam Gallagher, the frontman for the English band, hopped on the mic during a recent concert in the UK to assure fans that they would not get Coldplayed.
Okay.
At the band's performances. Sid Gallagher, who's 52, at a show in Manchester, England. Do we have any lovebirds in the house? Don't worry. We ain't got any of the Coldplay camera here.
I saw someone joke that they're going to have a new section at their shows that is for people that don't want to be on camera.
Why are we promoting extramarital affairs? I mean, that's essentially what we're doing here.
Apparently, Luke Bryan also getting in on the joke, playing in Greenville, South Carolina. He said to his audience, we're going to shine our cameras on anybody who's here with their secretary tonight.
Oh, God.
Nice.
I was reading stories this morning, people opining about whether or not this now disgraced CEO, who quit his job over the weekend, could potentially sue Coldplay.
No, because on the fine print of the back of the ticket, it says, like at the ballpark, if you get hit in the face with a hot dog from a hot dog gun, not our problem. If you get hit with a foul ball, not our problem.
If you get exposed for having an affair, well, it's not our problem?
I think there's probably something that says we are filming.
Subject to camera.
Your consent is implied when you take your seat.
If you are being a scumbag, you may be caught being a scumbag. Also, I did see a report yesterday that the chief of HR is also the former chief of HR now.
Oh, she has either
for whatever
been
reason,
fired or
nobody
quit.
Nobody is focusing on her because she also has a family that is now probably in shambles. But
well, you
I
know
did
what?
See a report
it,
that said that she
it serves them right.
Is no longer in a job.
Story here, by the way, speaking of office romances, a third of U.S. employees say that they have had an office romance.
I would expect it to be higher, and here's why.
Really?
Think of all of the people who work at the hospitality industry in their 20s. You know, that's all workers. I would expect that number to be higher. You never dated someone in your 20s that you worked with?
Wait a minute. Not just that you worked with. I'm sure the number is higher when it's just somebody you've worked with.
Yeah.
This is 30% say that they have been in a romance with their supervisor.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yep.
Now, I don't, so to your question, no, I don't think so regarding getting into a relationship with somebody I work with. However, does college count? Because I met Shonda at the when we were both working at the Alumni Center.
That's why I'm saying that number is going to skew higher because people are thinking, well, yeah, back when I was in my 20s.
Well, yeah, I mean, Shonda and I, she was the front desk gal, and I was a janitor at the Alumni Center, and that's where we met. Does that count?
Yes.
But
she was a coworker.
Yeah, but we ended up getting married. This wasn't just a fling.
You had some killer mopping skills.
I was a duster, Sam. I was a duster.
Love the way she cleaned that toilet.
Duster, really?
I was the one cleaning the toilets. I was the janitor. Did I ever tell you about the lady with the explosive diarrhea?
Yes, we've heard the story. I do not need to hear it again.
Okay.
How many wigs?
It was a 9-wig boom boom.
She put the boom in that boom boom.
Let's just say she repainted the walls of that stall.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The duster did not take care of that one.
No, that was, I was in there for about 30 minutes taking care of that business. We had to shut that bathroom down for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Yipper. Anyway, so 30% of American workers say they have engaged in a relationship with their boss or supervisor. 91%.
There it is.
Admitted to using flirting or charm to advance their careers.
Oh, I would have guessed in the 90s of percentages. Yes.
91%.
Yes.
9% lied. What? I thought you were going to say 91% have had a relationship with a coworker.
No. I've never flirted with my boss to get a raise or a promotion. All of my bosses have been men.
What does that mean?
We've never had a female program director here at KMBZ. That's what I mean.
He's like, but I'd flirt with a man too.
If now, it I mean, how much is it worth?
Speaking of boss, look who's outside of our door. And anytime we can get a couple of minutes with Bob Edwards, we are going to do so upon hearing about the death of Ozzy Osbourne today, dead at the age of 76.
The godfather
of heavy
metal.
In and of itself.
We will visit with Bob Edwards from 98.9 The Rock in just a moment here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.